Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
It's PLL quarterfinal week, and the PLL Happy Hour podcast is back. I am Matt Kinnear with Inside Lacrosse, here with Dan Kaplan and Kevin Brown from the IL staff, as well as our special guest this weekend, Michael Sowers, the MVP of last year's championship run for the Water Dogs. Looking to run it back again this season. Michael, you're heading into the quarterfinals. Just how's the vibes around the team? How are you feeling heading into this big moment of the season?
I think everybody's like fired up. This is exactly what you play for. It's for this stretch right here. I mean, you know, the cliche in college is you want to be playing your best lacrosse come May, and in the PLL, it's you want to be playing your best lacrosse come September. So we're finally here, and we're excited.
Unpredictable, like frenetic ways to end the regular season. You feel like you're peaking now, but just is the repeat bid just the quest to the win back-to-back titles here, just how like that, the cardiac Water Dogs coming in as reigning champs, like you said, how's that feeling inside the locker?
I don't know if people think about it too much. Like, you know, obviously it happened, but in the same breath, like, you know, we're the 3 seed, the Whips are the 6 seed, like, they could easily be the 1. You know, it's such a weird league in the sense that, like, seedings really don't mean a thing. The past certainly doesn't mean a thing. Like, anybody can beat anybody on any given day. So, you know, I think that obviously it's in the back of our minds a little bit, but at the same time, like, it means nothing. Like, to get back there and do it again, you got to be playing great week in and week out. And we were lucky enough to do that last year, but, you know, it's certainly going to be a challenge.
And I feel like one thing just with every team in the PLL, but like the Water Dogs especially, like so much of your playoff run is about kind of what Kevin said, like the locker room and how everybody's feeling. Cope at some point in a post-game interview mentioned that like the Water Dogs might not be the sexiest team, you know, but the locker room is like so supportive and, you know, everybody kind of like meshes together. What's your take on Coach, you know, saying that you guys might not be the sexiest, but you guys are just an awesome team and effective?
Well, I think, you know, I think he's kind of like spot on. I mean, you know, I think we're just kind of like an unselfish group that enjoys being around each other. You know, like, I think we only have like one guy up for the end of the season awards for like, for whatever it's worth. And, you know, honestly, I don't know if anybody in our locker room could like care less about it. You know, like, we just want to win, kind of by another week with each other and continue to play. So I think that, you know, I think Cope hits the nail on the head. And frankly, it starts with him, you know, like, it starts with him and his vibe and how he kind of...
My wife would kind of disagree. He is pretty sexy.
I'm sure Cope would appreciate that. But he does a great job. So I think it starts with Cope.
Sorry, didn't mean to totally throw you off guard there, but had to work that in both for her and everybody's, you know, sake there.
Mike, for you as like, you know, you're transitioning out of that, like, you know, young deer in headlights kind of rookie phase and into, you know, I won't say veteran quite yet, but, you know, experienced pro, so to speak. What's the biggest change just kind of in, you know, as you're kind of embarking onto that, you know, experience part of your pro career and out of that like rookie, you know, newcomer phase of your pro career? What's the biggest things you've learned?
You know, it's funny like you say that, Matt, because I think in some ways like I still feel like a rookie. You know, like the pro game is just so different from the college game, and I still feel like, I mean, this is year three for me, really year two with the first year like being out the whole year with injury. But, you know, I still feel like me personally, like I'm figuring it out and how defenses play, like people's tendencies, you know, like where to put your eyes in college. I think that stuff's pretty easy. You can pick up a lot of things like on film, and teams are just like very tendency driven. In the pros, it's you really just got to like play with your head up and make the play in front of you. And I think, you know, that takes some adjusting. And in some ways, I feel like I still am adjusting. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm lucky that we have such a great team and we have such a balanced team. You know, I have guys like Kieran McArdle, you know, who will be a Hall of Famer to learn from. And I think, you know, we're so balanced that it takes away the pressure of, you know, you got to go out and you got to get X number of points for the team to win. It's like we can get contributions from a lot of different guys. You know, for me, it's just I look at it and I just got to go out and just kind of make the play in front of me. And sometimes, you know, that means you walk away with 5 points on the day. And other times you might go 0-0 like me and Kieran did out in Seattle. But, you know, we have a great team. And at the end of the day, it's just about winning and moving on, especially at this point.
What's it been like going through a full season, fully healthy finally? And you went through some injury stuff last year as well. You obviously had the World Games and you win gold there, but just being fully healthy for a full season. How nice has that been?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I think that going into the season, like my number one goal above everything was just to be healthy for the whole season and playing every game. I mean, I know that people kind of looked at me like I was like a little injury prone, but before this year, or before the pros, like I had never missed a game. I don't think like ever in my sports career, like dating back to when I was like a kid. You know, like I might have missed high school football games. I had like mono, but other than that, like I can't remember missing like games, let alone like stretches of games or seasons. So that was the first thing. And I think, you know, that started with like my training. But to your point, Kevin, it's great to be traveling with the guys every week. Like in college, you're injured. At least you're still in the locker room. You're hanging out with the guys day to day. You're hurting the pros, like you're not with the team, you know, and so like it's hard to kind of like stay with the group and like continue to build chemistry. So I think just being able to travel, you know, every week has been awesome.
Kind of to that point, you've missed some time for, I guess, was it rhabdo, Mike?
Yeah, rhabdo. Yep.
So that obviously, and you know, not missing really any time before that has to be a frustrating thing for you. How did you kind of manage that mentally? And then this year, are you doing anything differently kind of to avoid it?
Yeah, I changed, actually, going into the year. The rhabdo was the biggest thing. And I actually started working with, like, a functional nutritionist. Not to get too far into the weeds of the whole thing. But
no, we like the weeds. We like to go into the
kind of just changed some different things that I was doing from a training standpoint, from a diet standpoint. Put a little extra weight on that, you know, like in the past, the rhabdo was a result of kind of like my body weight and where I was. So, you know, that was kind of priority number one. And obviously it's like, it's a difficult thing to deal with. Like, it's not like a pulled hamstring where, you know, there's like a set schedule and rehab. The rhabdo thing, like, you know, I don't know how many other athletes like deal with it on a consistent basis, like reoccurring rhabdo. So, you know, I definitely had to go back to the drawing board a little bit and definitely consult some different people, but I feel like I'm in a better place now than I've ever been because of it.
Yeah, man, for sure. Glad you got that thing figured out.
You you talked about the balance of this team, and you know, you look at the attack. Kieran has 34 points, you know, 20 goals, 14 assists. You have 30 points, 15 goals, 15 assists. Ethan, 30 points. 16 goals, 14 assists. I mean, like, that's like as balanced as you could statistically possibly be. How do you like differentiate the roles in the attack, and what do you kind of see as your role in that group?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, that's exactly how we want to be. You know, like, we want to have, when people talk about the water dogs, you know, like we want people to talk about like the entire group, and I think that makes it difficult. The game plan for a pro lacrosse team where, you know, you only have a couple Zoom calls a week and one practice to get ready. So I think that really benefits us. But I think in terms of roles, I think they evolve. I think, you know, Coke will talk about like a 2-quarterback system with me and Kieran. I think it's really like a 3-quarterback system. You know, like Ewalt kind of dominates up top and then I kind of dominate that low right corner and Kieran kind of dominates the low left. So I think that it's less like role oriented and more kind of like position on the field in the sense that, like, you know, we all can kind of score on ball without the ball. We all kind of play with our head up. So I think we're similar in that regard. Obviously, we have our own different styles, but, you know, I think it's kind of like a three-quarterback system in a way.
And I'll do a quick follow-up here of, you know, you mentioned Kieran McArdle and, like, future Hall of Famer is how you described him. And, you know, he's one of those guys that he seems like the perfect symbol for the team in the way that, like, his career, even though it's been super productive, has kind of been under the radar in some phases of it. He exploded, won the championship last year. Talk about his influence in this team.
Yeah, I think Kieran's just kind of like the ultimate pro. Obviously, like, he's such a seasoned veteran, and he's been playing at a high level for such a long time. And I think that, you know, he's kind of like the heartbeat of our offense. And, you know, when the going gets tough, we kind of look to him. And he's delivered time and time again. And I think, you know, he's finally starting to get the recognition that he deserves. But, you know, he's certainly up there with the best in the world.
I'm going to go away from the Water Dogs, though. And I am one person in media that is pretty much going to put it on my chest who I'm rooting for. And the Dogs are my squad. But I'm going to move away from them for a second and go out west back to San Diego. Take us to that conversation where you found out you were going to play midfield for Team USA instead of attack. What was, you know, your immediate reaction? And, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah, I think Coach D had a conversation with me at one of the tryouts and just kind of like mentioned that he was thinking about running me and Brennan out of the box and kind of described our roles similar to Matt Danowski and Ned Crotty back in 2018. And honestly, like, I was excited about it. I mean, for one, there was a lot of crossover between our offense with Team USA and the offense we ran at Duke. So me and Brennan kind of both being familiar with that from both a midfield and an attack standpoint, like, I felt like we could fit seamlessly in and play up top or behind. And then, you know, also too, like, you know, if you're running alongside Brennan and Tom Schreiber, like, there's only one LSM. So, like, you're running with those guys, you're probably going to end up getting a shorty. So I was excited about that. You know, obviously that team is just like such a selfless environment, and you're looking to kind of like champion these small little plays, whether it's just beating a guy and kicking the ball forward or sending a good off ball screen. It like really gets back to lacrosse like at its roots, and I think that, you know, playing midfield was a great experience, and I certainly learned a lot too doing it.
And then as a follow up to that, like, Pinnell, obviously, like, that was kind of his role at X, right? Like, he's kind of the perennial, like, X attackman to a lot of the guys, you know, our age, our generation, right? What was it like kind of playing with him? And obviously, when you join a team with him, like, there's going to be that element of, like, you know, we both are comfortable and, like, probably are most comfortable playing here at X, but, like, I can mesh and fit as a midfielder where he's definitely, you know, at his best in that X role. Like, what was that element like, and what is your relationship with Rob like?
I think that was one of the cooler parts of the whole experience, was playing with Rob and Tom, like, both guys that I, like, watched as a kid and kind of, like, idolized. You know, I remember going to the Cornell-Duke Final Four when it was in Philly back in 2013 and, like, switching sides in the back of the end zone to, like, follow Pinnell and, like, watch him behind. So now to, like, be, like, a peer and, like, a friend of his, like, it was just, like, a really cool experience. And I think, you know, I'm still, like, you know, not, like, it's a cool thing. It really is. And I tried to pick his brain as much as I could on everything from, you know, like, his hand placement on his question mark and different moves to just off the field stuff and how he carries himself as a pro. So that was a really a cool part of the experience.
Cap and I have some varying opinions of who should win the Defensive Player of the Year this season. In my mind, it's Graham Hossick from the Archers. They're the best team in the league in the regular season. But how cool is it to be the only guy who can really get any separation against the Cyborg here? I mean, when you go at Hossick, it's so fun to watch. I mean, I think it only rivals your battles with Rowlett, just the
in terms of individual duels, but just your ability to get a shot off versus anyone. Do you kind of have that mentality these days where you're going into any matchup thinking you can kind of just get past these guys?
I mean, I think so. Like, obviously, like, two very different body types, and you know, I think I kind of have like an upper hand in the foot speed, so you have to kind of take advantage of that. But you know, even like going back to like my role with the Water Dogs, you know, like when you're playing alongside guys like Kieran and midfielders like Jack Hanna, Connor Kelly, Ryan Conrad, Zach Currier, like, you know, like you don't want to hold the ball for too long. So, you know, like the whole dancing back and forth at X, trying to make a guy trip over the net, like, isn't really sustainable on like a 52-second clock. So for me, I think my game's changed to kind of like one hard move and get up the field and try and draw separation from a foot speed standpoint. And, you know, if you can turn the corner. And if not, you kick the ball forward. But I think that, you know, a lot of those big defenders, like, because they're so disciplined, naturally they're a little bit more patient. So I think that, you know, like, the only option you have is to really run as fast as you can by them.
Mike, the moment that I really knew that, like, I mean, obviously, since you were in high school, everyone knew you were a great player and, you know, played with the in the U19 games and all that kind of stuff. But the moment that I realized, like, man, this kid is, like, he's a special, like, going to be an awesome pro and everything, was you guys played Navy down at the Naval Academy. And, you know, speaking of the dancing behind the net, you kept getting their defender hung up on the crease the entire game. And I don't remember what you finished with, but it was a lot. But since then, you know, you talked about a number of things there that, like, are elements to your game. Like, what do you think is the way that you've most added nuance and other skills to your game over the past few years?
To be honest, I mean, the one thing that I've tried to pride myself on over, like, the last few years is just, like, playing without the ball. You know, like, in college, like, as a quarterback, like, you know, you're always looking to make plays with it, and you're a ball-dominant attackman as, like, a traditional ex-quarterback. But, you know, in the pros, like I mentioned, some of the guys, when you're playing alongside those guys, like, it's more efficient to have the ball for short clips in your stick. And I think that the ability to play off the ball, like, guys like Eric Law and just some of these, like, off-ball alphas that put so much pressure on a defense, like, it's something that I've tried to add to my game because, you know, a lot of these top defensemen, they're used to covering the ball, but to put them in an off-ball role, you know, sometimes they're not used to that. And on top of that, when you're playing alongside guys like Kieran McCardle and Ethan Walker that always have their head up, you know that if you cut hard, they're going to find you. So I think it's kind of gone hand in hand. And honestly, it's the same thing playing with Team USA and guys like Pinnell and Rambo. Like, those guys are always playing with their head up. So that's definitely one thing that I've tried to work on over the past few years.
And to piggyback off of that, I'm going to go ahead and put the ball back in your stick. But Kinnear mentioned the hang-up situations, and I'm kind of a nerd of the game, so I'm curious what, when you go into those hang-up situations, like, what are you reading, what are you trying to look for, and then, like, how are you trying to take advantage of it?
The, like, defenders in front of the cage, and I'm behind.
Yeah, when you're in the hang-up, like, what are you reading, and, like, what are you looking
at? Yeah, I mean,
without, you know, tilting your hand too much.
Yeah.
This weekend that I need you to win.
You know, the hang-up situations, they're kind of tough because in college, obviously, you can kind of sit back there all day. And I think college defenses are, like, more susceptible to getting, like, lost in, like, the spaghetti mix of, like, guys setting picks for each other, hard cuts down to the pipe. Like, the pro defense, like, guys just, like, don't really seem to get open. And I think that that speaks to, like, how good the defenses are. So it really just becomes, like, a one-on-one. And I think, you know, like, as an offensive guy, like, you're really just trying to win that battle at the point of contact, which is usually, like, right at GLE or at, like, 1-on-1. So, you know, you really don't have a ton of options in that spot, but, you know, it's definitely something that you see more of with a 52-second clock. Defenses are much more likely to just be like, yeah, we'll sit and hang, you know, like, eat up as much clock as you want sitting back there. So it definitely is challenging.
Yeah, everything is just so sped up, right, in the pro game there. And I want to ask you about the first time you met the Whipsnakes this season. But before I do that, what was the crazier ending? This regular season finale, which you stole it against the Archers in the last minute there, two goals up on you guys, and Kieran gets that one to go after the wild out-of-timeout play where you found Hannah up top. Or Connor Kelly just going off against Atlas earlier in the season, the 1918 thriller. Just compare those like two endings, and Kelly going on a heater there versus kind of the team getting a bunch of bounces, but you know, you make your own luck too there with Courier getting the over the head check and you with the heads up skip.
Yeah, I mean, they were both nuts. I think that the crazier one was probably, honestly, they were both nuts in their own way. Like, the Atlas game was crazy because, like, it just felt like nothing was going our way. I mean, I remember thinking at one point, like, man, like, we could set the record here for, like, the most lopsided loss in PL history. And then, you know, like, the dominoes just started falling, and obviously CK got hot. But that was one of those games where you just felt like all momentum shift. And even when we were down like 8 at one point, it was like, all right, like momentum's on our side. The bounces are going our way. Like, you know, there's a chance. Like, it might be slim, but there's certainly a chance. And then CK obviously just took it over. This last one, it was just, you know, like you're down 2 with 30 seconds left. We thought we had like a great play drawn up, which we did. Ryland comes out of the box, gets a great look, and then it's like, all right, well, you know, if it's pretty much over at that point, but the ball kind of bounced right to me, and I think they were a little scrambled, didn't know where the rebound was. Jack did a great job of finding space, just kind of lofted one, and, you know, he hit, like, the perfect shot. You know, like, that misses, or Rashida makes a save, and, like, the game's over. So that one was wild, too, and then to win it in regulation, I mean, we were down 2, like 30 seconds left, you know, to win that in regulation is pretty nuts.
So just to keep going with kind of these end of the game situation things here, a lot of teams, I think that one of the cool things obviously about PLL is the access, right? Like the broadcast literally puts a camera and a microphone in the huddle at the end of game. So fans are like keyed into what should happen. The juxtaposition between like Water Dogs huddles and like say a Whipsnakes huddle is pretty remarkable, where it's like Stags in one huddle is, you know, giving a, this is how it's going to be. They ask a question and it's like, here's our answer. Cope, it literally was like, I think word for word, he said, if I had my preference, like we'll get the ball to Mike and this is what would happen. What's that like for you as a player? Like, how do you feel about, you know, each end of the spectrum, and how do you think that kind of works for the Dogs?
You know, I think that like what's unique about the PLL and cool in the same at the same time is like each coach has their unique style, and like it certainly works for them. You know, like I think Cope is so great in that regard, in the sense that he kind of like empowers us as players to kind of like take ownership, and I think that there's just mutual trust there where, you know, when he asks, like, what do you guys think? What do you guys want to do? He knows that, like, you know, usually we're going to give him the right answer back. And I think at the end of the day, like, everybody knows who the alpha is and who's calling the shots, and that's Cope. But at the same time, like, I think it's empowering as a player for him to be like, hey, like, what do you guys want to do here? You know, and it's more of, like, a collaborative effort, and it makes it so enjoyable. Because, you know, like we're kind of all piecing this thing together. Like that last play that where we sent Mitty over the midfield line and Ryland came out of the box, like that was CK who had that idea. So, you know, like that was pretty cool. And nobody gave CK credit. I was like, CK, that was a great play. But
well, here you are. You get to.
Yeah, exactly.
Teammate of the year right
now. Yeah.
That's good to know, though, because I was giving Copeland all the credit there. Because I think, look, like,
well, back on he it, gets the credit because he let CK make a decision.
Yeah, it's Cope definitely had some say, but it was CK who said, like, let's bring Ryland out of the box.
I remember the camera angle, too. He's kind of, like, saying it so casually, like, right next to him. He's like, why don't we do this? And thinking back to that Atlas game, like, obviously, like, the play was going to be drawn to him, but without Caraway in that season finale, you didn't have that kind of two-man game with another, like, lethal two-pointer. I mean, Hannah obviously can do it. That's what got CK up and opened so well against the Atlas. It's just very cool to revisit with you. And I mean, that was going to be my follow-up. I was going to ask if Copeland's just, like, the best out-of-timeout guy that you've ever coached under, but
Cope is great. He is great coming out of timeout. And I think part of it is because, like, one, he sees the game, so he knows what's going on, but at the same time, he's asking us. So, you know, like, it's a great, like, collaboration.
I got two questions. First one, who is the best teammate you've ever played with, and why is it Mikey Schlosser?
I was going to say Mikey Schlosser, even if you didn't say the second part.
Why is that?
I think, like,
he has that total reputation around the league.
He does, and it's absolutely deserving. I mean, I think that just having, you know, I know he's banged up, but, like, just having him on the sidelines for our games, like, is, like, extra momentum and feels like we have an extra guy out there. I mean, I think, for one, he just, like, he's so positive, and I think that it's so infectious in our locker room, and it kind of, like, bleeds throughout where, you know, like, even when we're down 8-1 against an Atlas, like, the sideline's so positive, and it's like, yo, like, we have the firepower to do it, and I think, like, that leads to us doing it in the end. You know, I think it's the same thing in the Atlas or the Archers game where things weren't going our way, but, you know, because we stay positive on the sideline, and I think it starts with him and some of our other vets, like, we're always hanging around. Like, I think we're a hard team for people to, like, really lose and bury, and I think that it starts with those guys.
All right, and then question two, who's the most underrated player in the league, and why is it Matt Witcher? I can accept that.
It probably is Witch. I was gonna say Ethan Walker too, but Witch. I don't know how Witch, like, isn't up for short sake D-Mid of the year. Like, I think, you know, he has. Somehow, like, it flies under the radar, like, how deadly he is in transition. Seems like every time he comes down, he scores. And on top of that, like, he goes toe-to-toe with some of the best offensive middies in the league. And, you know, he gets switched on to some of these attackmen, and, like, there's no panic in our defense. So I think he's obviously great, and I think, you know, he'll be getting the recognition he deserves hopefully soon. And then I think, honestly, Ethan Walker is the same way, you know, like, I think he had, like, a 30-point season, and he's just, like, so efficient, and, like, I think he's, like, the ultimate compliment to really anybody on the field in the sense. He does all the little things, like, great passer, great pick setter, great ground ball guy, rides so hard, does so many things, like, in between the lines that fly under the radar. So I think he's right up there in that conversation as well.
Dan, getting the York College love in there. No, any way he can get it by inserting Matt Witcher into the conversation.
Yeah, it took me 31 minutes to start to even mention his name, so I think I did a pretty dang good job.
That's better than normal for you. Ethan Walker, though, it's funny. Bill Tierney, in not so pleasant and cordial terms, once told me his Ethan Walker senior year how little hype Ethan Walker was getting and how it was so stupid of us. I've heard that one before, but just to kind of bring it back, we're getting close to the finish here. I think Kevin's going to follow up with one, but just, you know, you guys have the Whip Snakes, and you started this by saying something along the lines of, like, they could be the number one seed. You know, we could be the number six or the number seven seed. This league is kind of weird in that way. If there's a team that's been consistently good during the PLL's 5 years, it's the Whip Snakes. What is it about them that, you know, might scare you guys? You know, what is it that you have to really be conscientious of when you're playing the Whip Snakes?
I think it's so many things. Like, for one, like, they're obviously very well coached, and Stags does a great job. It's like a very professional team in how they go about things and their preparation. I think, you know, that's a credit to Staggs, and their consistentness starts with him. But, you know, at the same time, like, it's so many other guys. Obviously, they kind of have the two-headed monster and Rambo and Zed on the offensive end. But then, you know, there's so much chemistry on the defensive end with all those Maryland guys. And obviously, it starts with big Mike Earhart. And I got a chance to play with him firsthand with Team USA and see the type of leader that he is and how he can kind of galvanize the locker room and take over a game himself. And, you know, I think that when you combine both those teams, and they also have the two-point threat and the transition threat, you know, we know that they're a great team. We're the higher seed for sure, but we know it's going to be a dogfight. And so, you know, they're a team that can turn it on at any point, and I think, you know, we'll be ready for it.
Already notched one win against them. Obviously, a second win will be a tough to do. Tough ask, because the third seed getting kind of the toughest draw of the quarterfinal round here. But just how much do you take from that film regarding the personnel that they didn't have in that first game?
You know, obviously it's a different Whips team that we're going to see this time around, both because of the guys that they didn't have and because of, you know, the time of year that it is. You know, everybody's kind of playing for their lives, and, you know, there's a lot of vets on that team. Like, they know the drill that, you know, you could go winless in the regular season and somehow sneak in the playoffs and, like, still have a chance to win the whole thing. So, you know, I think that, you know, we're very aware of them not having guys, and that this is going to be a different Whips team. And like I said, you know, hopefully we'll be ready for it. Like, they got a great team for sure. And, you know, it's anybody's game.
Mike, we'll sign you off with this. Just piggy off Kaplan's line of questioning here. Who's your favorite screen setter on the team?
My favorite pick setter, which changed because I think CK's getting the poll a little bit more. But see, I'm always going to go back. CK's a great pick setter. Ethan Walker's a great pick setter. Currier's getting better.
I don't know why I found it funny that you said getting better.
Yeah, indoor guy. Is he moving too much?
There was some previous conversation.
No, Zach's a great pick setter, and that goes all the way back to our Princeton days. But, you know, he's so used to, like, getting a pull that I think sometimes, like, you know, he's not used to setting those picks. But he's obviously a stud. I mean, he does it all the time in indoor, and he obviously does a million other things on the field other than set picks. So, he can get some slack for one little thing.
Maybe the best midfielder in the world, you know.
Well, Mike, good luck on the road back to Philly.
Awesome. Thanks,
Mike. Thanks so much, man.
Welcome back. Thanks, Mike Sowers, for the time on the PLL Happy Hour podcast. We are going to do a little something different here. We're going to take Kevin Brown and Dan Kaplan and pit them against each other for a little segment that we're starting in playoff time here. Kevin versus Cap. We're going to make these guys justify their picks for this weekend, and I'm going to be a little bit of a Tony Reale here and tell you who I think performed better in this segment. So, we're going to talk
about
the game.
Are we actually getting points? Are you going to get, I have a pen and paper right here. I can keep track, and I definitely won't cheat for myself.
I'm going to give you guys points, but just like the show, it's going to be an erroneous point system where
perfect.
You know, there's no real scale, just other than what I'm feeling at the moment. So
I love it. As somebody who came home every single day from school for years and watched Around the Horn, I could not be more into this right now.
When I was in college, which was now a long time ago, that was, you know, Around the Horn and PTI back to back was the jam every single day. I don't know if they're even still both on back to back right now, but they still are. Even 15 years later or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Wow. So anyway, the games this weekend, we have the PLL quarterfinals. As you guys know, the Archers have a bye. They were the number one seed and advanced to the semifinals where they're going to play, you know, depending on how the matchups come out this weekend. So first game we got is Chaos Redwoods. These teams split in the regular season. It's an over under of 24.5. And the Chaos are favored by a goal and a half. Cap, we're going to start with you. Who do you have and why? What is the most important factor in this game?
Oh, man. This is a loaded question because my brain and my heart are in different places. I got to come off the bat and say that. But people know me. You know I'm a loyal guy. You know I'm going to rock with my Redwoods. One of them played at York. The Chaos are dressing exactly zero people that played at York. Therefore, you know where my pick is. But I got to tell you, boys, I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it. So officially on the Redwoods, but definitely worried about it. I think a couple keys to give you here. My first one, I got to go with Redwoods defending the inverts, right? I think if the Redwoods can come out and they can take care of all the invert sets that the Chaos throw at them, that's going to be one way of setting them up for a ton of success on that side of the ball. A lot of what the Chaos do, right? Like it'll be a little bit different with Burn back, but for the last few weeks, we haven't had too much of him. So, you know, what they've been living out of is a lot of this invert set, and Kyle Jackson has been really, really impactful out of it. So, yeah, I think step number one, Redwoods eliminating the invert sets. And yeah, I think they can do it. I think the personnel is set for it. I think they know it's coming. And yeah, that's my step number one for you.
You know, both these teams are coming into the game with wins. You know, the Redwoods have won a few straight, three straight in a row. Chaos beat the Chrome to end the season. So both can kind of play the card of we have momentum going into this game. Kevin, what's your take on this?
Yeah, so Cap, you mentioned it. The invert sets are going to be deadly for Chaos. And I'm taking Chaos. The key in this battle is the production from the offensive midfield for both teams. And the offensive production outside of Cole Kirst, the starlet, fresh face rookie in this league, has been non-existent this year. And it's starting to ramp up a little bit. Jules is looking a little more spry as the year has gone on. But, man, it's tough pickings out there. Romar hasn't really found a shot quite yet since the trade, really. And the midfield for Chaos it's been clicking this year, right? The Kyle Jackson invert, Will Perry has been finding his spots from time to time, and Dane Smith, what a ridiculous stat line Dane Smith has this season of, what, 5 goals and over 20 assists? Fact check. 25 assists, 5 goals. Just, the guy refuses to shoot the ball, but... Coming into this game, he's going to need to take it to the rack a couple times himself. And listen, Josh Byrne starting to get healthy.
Yeah, so Byrne being right. Healthy is definitely a part of what scares me, right? And then Dane has been getting pulled, which is a big part of where all of that comes from, right? Like, I think when he can get into those invert sets and he can get tighter to the goal right away, like, that's definitely where a lot of those feeds come from because he's getting slid to right away, right? And then really when he's at his best is if he can get to the middle of the field, because like you said, Kev, like he's feeder first, but it's not like he can't score. And to that point, like he's getting slid to, which is why he has all those opportunities to become a feeder. And that's like part of it. So it's a little bit of a give and take there. But yeah, so Byrne being healthy, definitely a scary factor in the Redwoods pick there. You mentioned Jules, and I think that's another side where like, going back and watching the game from where they played at Hop, like Jules plays great in that game. They score a couple of different goals off of him scoring. He scores his own going under with a pick from Westberg, which I'd expect us to see that again as well. Right. I expect them to come out and double pull and put a short stick on Westberg. And now we're going to get that Jules Westberg like 2-man action on the high right corner. And that was pretty good for him. Jules gets a couple out of it. They get another really good look out of it late game. It's a 1-goal game with 2 minutes on the clock. That's what they come out and go to. So, yeah, I think Jules kind of is getting into his rhythm. I think that mesh and that fit where like, when he's pulled, he can go up and work on the high corner with Westberg setting a pick for him, right? And if he has a short stick, then he can go and work with Pennell at X and 2-man with them. So I think regardless of kind of how they come up and line up, Jules is definitely going to be a big part of it. And like you said, he's been hitting his stride of late. So I think that he's set up to have another big game this week.
Kevin, you're going to get 2 points on this one.
Let's go. The ruling is in. Come on. You know how hard it was for me to go against Owen Grant? And I know Dan has the Ryan Kennedy connection, and it's, I think that's
a double lefty duo up there.
If you see staff picks, well, and I actually picked the Redwoods, then no, that's, it's just a, it's a Nolan Grant pick, and the reason lies with picking the Chaos in September.
Well, the reasoning, Dan, you talked about this game and you picked the Redwoods, so I understand why you didn't, but you can't do your spiel without mentioning Dane Smith once. So that's why Kevin gets the point. And yeah, only a passing mention of Josh Burke.
All right. 2 points for Kevin.
Dane Smith is the most incredible, like, phenom in the sport right now, just for this freakish ability to make these passes. So him not getting a mention and Kevin going in depth on him is why Kevin gets the points here. Not fair, but that's what it is. You're also at the whim of my biases and my, my opinions as well, and I'm going with the Chaos. So, Whipsnakes versus Water Dogs. Water Dogs won this one 16-13 in the regular season on July 14th. That was a long time ago, so it's a much different Whipsnakes team in particular. Over-under 24.5. Water Dogs are favored 1.5. You know, a pretty standard over-under and line that these PLL games get. So not much to really deduce from that, but the Water Dogs are the favorite, as Mike Sowers mentioned. So, you know, the Whipsnakes are the team that has more, you know, the pedigree, the, you know, whatever you want to call it, the history of success in this league, though the Water Dogs are the defending champions. So certainly not a shoe-in for the Water Dogs to win this one. Kevin, what's your deciding factor in this one?
Two deciding factors in this one, Matt, and it goes down to one, history. They've played in the semifinals each of the past two seasons. They've split those. Whipsnakes obviously won the first semifinal en route to the losing that first championship that they lost, and Chaos become the second champion of the PLL. And then last year, the War Dogs, they won the semifinal en route to becoming the champs themselves. So if you beat the Whips, then you're going to become the champs, it seems like. But I'm going with the Whips because you've gone Whips, Water Dogs, now it's Whips again. It's a take your turn kind of pattern here, and it's the Whipsnakes' time. Like the 4-6 record, don't be fooled. Sorry, Mike Sowers, you're a great guest, but I'm picking against you because with such a frenetic style, I mean, the end of game chaotic style of winning just isn't sustainable for the Water Dogs, and their up and down style of play and real, when they create a lot of transition, I don't think that's going to work against the Whipsnakes team, who's the most disciplined transition defense in the league, who has some of the best substitution methods coming up after faceoff wins. And that's why I'm going with the Whips.
Yeah, I'm heavy on the Dogs. So heavy on the Dogs. Whips offensive, like, personnel, they've been together for all of like 12 days. And when you go back and watch a lot of that, like, 6-on-6 play from the Whips offensively, it's a different combination of guys constantly. And you have this, like, weird sense of, like, all right, we can come out and go with, like, what we've traditionally done and try and, like, work these slam picks. And teams just go out and extend on this, like, first thing, and they get stuck. And Ball ends up getting, like, literally trapped in a midfielder stick while they're just staring at an attackman that they're supposed to throw the ball to. Right. And so, like, those traditional, like, slam picks have gotten snuffed out about a little bit. Right. Like, they're clearly on, like, this track of, like, they're changing things because what they've done isn't giving them confidence. Right. Like, Will Manny's sitting a whole bunch at times. Like, Jackson Morrill gets short sticked at times. Like, there's a lot of different stuff that, like, defensively, the Water Dogs are going to have their pick at the litter to be able to do to disrupt them. And I think one of those things is going to be like a triple pull. Don't be surprised if Will Manny and Jackson Morrill are out there at the same time. They're both going to get short sticks, and neither one of them goes by either one of them. So I think they find a lot of troubles within 6-on-6 sets. They've been moving Zed up to play, like, midfield, right? And that hasn't worked at times. Just then he goes back down. Manny goes back and takes a seat on the bench. And, like, now you have a goal scorer that does so much for you and moves inside. And, like, he scores a goal from Morrill to Manny inside where they actually do get on the field at the same time. But it takes so much to actually, like, these other guys to draw slides. And I just think they're going to run into a lot of issues there on that side of the ball, especially when it comes to, like, just drawing slides. And, like, every four possessions, you have a new like group out there, there's no real chemistry on the offense. And then it ends up with like Rambo trying to run through four people and like he's banged up, right? Like I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. I'm not quite as heavy on the dogs as you, but I am in, you know, team dogs. Shout out to Mike Sowers, our guest. So Kaplan, 3 points for you.
Boom! And 3 points in the back of the league.
The point totals change as I dictate. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, the thing that I've been saying all year, like in our Slacks or whatever, is just like the Whipsnakes just don't like, they don't have that it factor that they have in the past, you know, that like invincibility, so to speak, of, you know, the you look at the individuals and you feel like it should, but like you said, Matt Rambo has clearly not been himself, been banged up, and you know,
same with Brad Smith. I think Brad Smith has been pretty banged up, and you know, I think you can tell as well.
There's an it factor that the Whipsnakes used to have that the Water Dogs do have now. I feel like the identity of the league has shifted a little bit. You know, I would even go as far to say as maybe if the, you know, if the Whipsnakes were kind of the like the first 3-4 years of PLL, the class of the PLL, I think maybe it's going to be the Water Dogs era for this next few years.
Yeah, I also hated
the horses.
I also hated Kevin's point about like not being able to keep pulling out games miraculously. That is true to a degree, but like they keep pulling out these games because they're the best team in the league, right? Like there's a lot to be said for executing at the end of the game and like playing with confidence, and like I think that has a lot to do with their build and their roster.
The Whips have been in every game in the fourth quarter. They've lost 3 or 4 games in fourth quarter stretches. They're in every single game. I don't think they've lost much mojo. What's happened this season is they've been super injured the first half of the season. Dunn, Earhart, Smith, you mentioned. Rambo's been banged up all season. Zed coming in from indoor. The list goes on. No Joe Nardella the whole season. P. LaSalle's filled in admirably.
Yep.
The Earhart's fully healthy. Dunn's fully healthy. I'm not sure how fully healthy, but he'll be playing. And Chanchuk has had the best midfield production season of like his PLL career since 19, maybe.
He's also getting short-sticked.
Right. I mean,
Kevin, I look at your logic and I take the opposite conclusion of it, though. The defining characteristic in this league is your ability to win the crazy games at the end of the game. Right now, the Water Dogs can and the Whipsnakes can't. So I think that's why they are the team to go with.
The Whips are due.
All right. Let's move on here. This one's going to be Atlas versus Cannons. Now, on paper, you know, the over-under is 26.5. The Atlas obviously lost both of these games. The surprising fact is just 2 weeks ago, it was a one-goal game. You know, that was a stretch where the Atlas had some close games, but, you know, obviously they have not been impressive in many factors at all this year. The Cannons are favored by 2.5 goals, which if you follow the PLL and the betting lines, you know, that's significant, so to speak. Most of them are 1.5. So this is really a true, you know, underdog versus favorite situation. Cap, we're going to go with you. What's the deciding factor here?
Two bombs, baby. Two bombs. I think Cannon struggles with them. We've seen it a bit. And the Cannons have a bunch of different guys that they can bring it. And they've had this, like, just knack to go on these scoring runs that are basically fueled by two bombs, right? Think back to Atlas Cannons from a couple weeks ago. They hit that game that you were referencing where they win by one. They hit 3 twos in a row in the third quarter, like back to back to back. One of them being right at the end of the third quarter. Jenner steps in from two, like just a bomb, right? Like, and that was kind of off of a bad penalty, right? And the other one was also off of a bad penalty. So there's an element to be said that, like, if the Atlas didn't keep, like, hurting themselves in those moments, that, like, they're going to be better set up. And in a one-goal game, you can look at that and be like, well, there's the difference, right? But I think of it as kind of similar to what you were saying about the Dogs. Like, the Cannons just have this mojo that allows for them to go on these scoring runs. And they have the personnel that, like, they can go down 12-8, and next thing you know, or they can go down 10-8, and next thing you know, they're up 12-8 because they just hit two twos in a row, and that also happened against the Whips 3 weeks ago. So, yeah, they have this, like, ability to go on these scoring runs and hit from two, and I think that's a really bad mix with the Atlas transition defense and Kincannon and Cage.
Yeah. Kevin. I'll start with my takes with this is definitely the David versus Goliath of the quarterfinal round. I mean, the Cannon should be favored by 4.5 at least. Atlas have been just shooting themselves. They don't lose the game in the foot all season long. And I think it's time they don't, because of stupid mistakes. I think they keep it close, and as long as they keep it close for through the first three quarters, I mean, obviously the Cannons have shown the ability to score in spurts and in the fourth and pull away with it all season long. But to me, this Cannons group is kind of like I can see it being a Chrome situation where they were kind of the bright new turnaround team of last summer, and then they come into the quarterfinal round, and then they got blitz defensively against Chaos, and they couldn't score. And that's not going to happen against the most porous defense in the league with Atlas. But as long as they don't go off sides and they don't get stupid penalties and they don't slide up field in transition, they get back in the hole. Atlas, I think, could pull this one out. I'm going with Atlas in a huge upset in the quarterfinals. I just think the Cannons are just too much of a good story. There's too many good vibes, and they're going to have a letdown performance here in Gillette Stadium.
You know, that's a point for Dan Kaplan here, because, you know.
That was a layup.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I'm even questioning just giving him 1 point here. But I don't know, like, you can't pick. I would agree with you if I saw more heart from the Atlas. You know, looking at the, you know, with them potentially in a situation where it's, you know, they need to take care of the goal differential and to come out and to lay an egg like they did in that first quarter. I just don't see this team with the fight. If they, like, if there's going to be a scoring run from the Cannons, and there will be at some point, some sort of, whether it's a two bomb or some sort of like crazy transition goal, I just don't see the Atlas being able to like take the punch and punch back.
Well, the Drenner two-pointer that Kaplan mentioned was kind of a great encapsulation of just their terrible decision.
Yeah, they run offside, have too many men with like 12 seconds left in the quarter, and then just don't guard anybody for the remaining 12 seconds and give up a two after having given up two twos right before it. It's perplexing.
You've got to know that the penalty doesn't carry over quarter to quarter the pro level here.
It boils all over. There's gonna be a face off. They're gonna shoot the ball.
And lo and behold, Kincannon can't stop the bouncer. So, I mean, I get all the concerns, and I kind of had an impossible task there to make a case for Atlas, but wanted to get a counter argument down.
You can claim it if you have the upset. So, right. You always got that in your back pocket, and I mean, there's also the factor of the face-off. You know, it's been the storyline of the season so far. You know, Trevor's going to win a ton of face-offs. Is there some sort of, like, did the Atlas take this week and figure out something to do to more effectively make use of the 32-second clock? I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of time and they haven't done it yet, so it's tough to say that they will, but, you know.
I agree with you. But to me, I feel like if the Atlas were to go back and fix one thing about like between regular season and playoffs, they aren't going to address the 32-second shot clock, right? They would be worried about team defense. And actually, I think it was a really clear, like, you get rid of Cade Van Raphorst, right, who's like a team to first defender at the expense of like a Durkin, an Adler, a Makar, right? Like these guys that in theory just are never good. Rex Road, right? These guys that like just aren't going to need slides. Like it's a very clear, like Atlas are, we're getting away from team defense and we're thinking like, let's just own up on matchups. Like Danny Logan is one of our short sticks. Like he's a dude we're never going to need to support. So on any given time, like there could only be one person out there that could ever need a slide. Like in theory, that all works great. but in practice didn't really pan out. And now CVR is having this like awesome season for the Cannons, and now they see each other in playoffs. I think that's an interesting storyline as well. But I think for the Atlas, like before they went and like address and try and figure out that solution, which obviously it is something, but like, I don't know that it needs to be more complicated than quickly throw the ball to Chris Gray and like sub and let him dodge. Right. Like, or quickly get the ball to Chris Gray and like set him a pick, like whatever it is, like that side of it, I feel like is less concerning to me than like the team defense side and like giving up 15 plus goals every game.
For sure. All right. It's award season in addition to playoff season. So this weekend we're going to, you know, hear the PLL individual awards, and you guys have over the past week or so, we've been sharing on our IL Slack some all pro teams that you guys have. So let's share them here. You know, each of you, we're going to go through your all pro team and, you know, just kind of justify some of the guys that you think are maybe unique, and we'll see who has the better one. We'll try to throw this up on the internet and let the folks decide as well. So yeah. Cal, we'll start with you since you've won the game prediction segment of this.
Let's go. This.
Who is on your all pro team?
All right, so how should I do this? Just fire through it, or do we want to go like, do I first and second team, or just first team?
Let's. How about you do this? First team attack, and then okay. Kevin will do his first team attack.
All right, so my first team attack, I have Holman, Sowers, Fields.
Kevin?
I have Holman, Asher, Nolting, and Connor Fields.
So Sowers and Nolting becomes the argument.
And that is just an egregious mistake on your end.
Isn't
egregious?
The only player.
A little bit of a strong word.
The in PLL era to score 20 goals and 20 assists in a season is Asher Nolting. He's elevated to the primary initiator role for this Cannons offense and turned them into the best offense in the league. I mean, he's a shoo-in.
Is he what turned them into the best offense in the league, though?
All right, he's led as the primary initiator, and there's been other factors, obviously. I misspoke. Asher Nolting has been nothing short of remarkable all season, where Michael Sowers, he picks his spots, and I think hasn't had
I don't think you can have two
McCardle also producing and that kind of thing. So I'm going Asher.
I think it's a really hard argument to have two guys from the same team on first
offense
team.
In the league.
That attack.
Not when it's the top.
I don't know, man. I also think that your argument of he's what like revolutionized the offense, I think that's a tough sell too. I think they had a guy that comes in and never like has the ball on his stick for more than 13 seconds at a time. But when he does, it's because he won a matchup and he never shoots the ball wide and he keeps the group on task. And like his name is Marcus Holman and he's kept everybody organized and he's an MVP candidate that I think has a real, real shot at it. So my argument is that like Holman is the first teamer of the group for all of those things that I just said. And like, yeah, Nolting has done a really good job at his role, like initiating, winning matchups, getting to 5-on-5, and nobody can slide because if you leave Marcus Holman for a half a second, you're screwed. Or really, if you leave anybody on that offense for a half a second, you're screwed, right? Like, I think that's really what has made the offense like take that jump to the next level rather than Nolting being a better Dodger.
Are either of you guys going to take the bait and do the Lyle Thompson is overrated thing and break the internet for a few days?
Nope. Because I think if Lyle Thompson was playing at X instead of Asher Nolting, this offense is exactly the same.
I tend to lean more towards Dan's reasoning here in terms of, but I, at the same token, like, I don't want to diminish Asher's, like, ability to execute that. You know what I mean? It's not just like any guy can go in there and be there, and just because Marcus Holman is there, he's going to have that kind of production. I think Asher's ability to, you know,
I mean, the first midfield is pretty set for everyone, I believe. It's
the
three finalists
for
midfield of the year, and it's
if we have anybody
the leading
different
MVP
in the midfield,
candidate
I'll
in my mind, and Tom Schreiber, it's the leading assist man. Yeah, and Dane Smith and the Mr. Do Everything, Zach Currier. I think you can't go wrong with that. Those three.
For the record, I have Nolting as second.
For the record, this I just need to get this off my chest. The arbitrary points. Reasoning of not having two players from the same team who are both leading the league in points. I mean, Asher was leading the league.
That was like the least impactful reason of all of the spiel, though.
It really grinded my gears, dude. I couldn't believe it. The debates come in the other special team midfield
point
spots.
Number 18
on the defensive end for sure, though.
Yeah, I mean the midfield. It's kind of a boring debate because there is no debate, right? I mean, is there anyone that you would potentially squeak in there?
No.
Like, I don't think it's even close, right?
And.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's go to, let's skip face off for now and go to, you know, your shorties.
The known dodges on them. Everyone's game plan is to stick away and go away from. I get it. He's kind of Revis Island. No one, Danny Logan. But listen, man, you're on the worst defense in the league by a wide margin. If you can't find another way to be impactful and, like, help this group out, like, I don't know what to tell you.
He didn't cut Cade Van Raphorst. That was his stupid coach's fault.
Look at the season Bubba Fairman's had in my mind, and it's hard to go in the top, 15? Of top 17, Witcher, our other boy. He's been remarkable, Bubba Fairman. He's been so active in everywhere between the arcs. He's third in calls turnovers, the only short stick in the top 10.
I have Witcher over Fairman, too.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say, Kevin, I agree with you in the sense of, like, all pro awards are to some extent team awards. I know that people disagree with that, but I think it's the reality of it. And yes, you can be this Revis Island-esque guy, but if your defense is terrible, I don't think I can put up one of your guys in this caliber of award. So
it's going for Kevin.
Stick with that. Second thing, Kaplan, I am shocked that you do not have Matt Witcher as your guy.
So Witcher has been the best all around, and there's not really an argument. In terms of guard the ball, clear the ball successfully, create transition.
I think he's top three, for sure.
No, he's been overall. He has goals scored, calls turnovers, percentage. I love Joe Keegan's stat on shot percentage allowed against them. Right, but what that doesn't include is the number of times that they just don't even get a shot off, or they just get strapped to Guam, right? Those are two things that aren't included in and so for my money, as in terms of every single thing, if you're looking at every aspect of it, there hasn't been somebody that's been better in every single aspect.
Danny Logan,
I mean, he's literally been better than every poll.
And it's been Logan, coming in with an injury, too, from the SEAL season. Yeah, there's not one. So, it's been all the more impressive for him to stay as good one-on-one defensively as he is. But I would argue down between the arcs. He's so important for this group. And the stat that you mentioned, D-Mitty, that's been better than Witcher this season all around. There's two. Bubba, who I mentioned, Latrell Harris has been out of his mind all year, leading this archers unit in the rope unit, just flying around to the closest defender for D-Mids. He's only beyond. He picks up first time ground balls on the wings, and he's so good in the clearing behind Danny Logan in terms of shooting percentage against. Guys don't score goals against him very often, and he's one of the fastest guys in the league. He's my second D-mid.
So would he have been your second? He's your second.
He's my second for sure. Reigning NLL Defender of the Year, he's,
Face off, guys. Dan, let's start with you.
I went Baptiste, then Ireland. Earl. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Really? Ireland over Sisselberg? I think that's fair. I do think that not too much that, argument.
I mean, I think it's Baptist, here. But you just like again, everything I said about the team award thing, I feel like I am just throwing out the window with this one. But just you can't be that lopsided of a curve. And Faceoff is, you know, I to some extent consider that more of the individual, to some extent with goalie as well. But Erland's like ability after the faceoff this year, I think, has been insanely improved and just worth noting.
Yeah, that's kind of why I have him at second as well. Just everything else that comes with it. And like, right now, like we've seen the like progression, right? Like faceoff, like Fogo has very quickly turned into faceoff specialist, right? Like there's a lot of different things that those guys are doing.
Oh, we're disagreeing. I think
those
for
two
sure.
are the two that are it's best so suited lopsided. And, you know, all around.
The stats are
still. LSM, I expect maybe, I don't know if you guys are going to have the same one or if you guys are going to have a disagreement here. Kevin, we'll start with you on your LSM first teamer.
You know, he's been so elite all over the field for, you know, all these years, but it's just the stats are just. No, I do. I totally do. The stats are too loud of them are not coming off the draw.
You don't even believe.
No. Don't give
you
me
don't
that.
Even believe
not
yourself.
The majority. It's a tough
you don't
one.
Even
you know,
yourself
I think
as you're saying this.
Mike Erhardt's so good, but he missed the first three games of the season. He's pickpocketing guys on man down and scoring himself,
taking the ball away from like, face off guys. Yes,
that's still impressive.
And even decided
not
does
to
go
with the like, undrafted rookie out of Rutgers, Ethan Raw, leading the league in calls for turnovers,
missing it's
the
different.
First week because
totally
he wasn't even rostered.
Like Michael Erhardt,
25
like putting the ball on the ground against like any of the best offensive midfielders, and then scoring.
And he's not even
the best. Right?
He's
like,
not.
You mentioned
close.
One goal. Ethan Raw's one goal was great. It really was. Michael Erhardt had that within like 15 seconds of being back, right? He missed a few games, yes, but he's so far and beyond the biggest difference maker at the LSM position. It's silly.
This is one of those things where like I wish that these things were voted on at the end of the playoffs, because the way that the PLL sees it, like it just feels
yeah, but that's
too
not
short,
the question,
and,
is
like,
it? That's...
There's so many like weird conflicts that happen and injuries that like. I want to see how
it goes
these
beyond
guys
the numbers for
the
sure.
Next level in
but
time before
it's hard effects. To ignore.
You know, whatever.
It's
I understand. Hard. Like for when we do our college All Americans, we do them at the end of the regular season, and then things like the Tourton are based
yeah,
on
post. If right now you asked all eight PLL head coaches who's scarier, Big Mike or Ethan Rawl, they'd be like, you know what? Ethan's had a great season, but Big Mike is fucking terrifying. Yeah, it is. Big Mike, in less games, has had an equally impactful season, if not better. Ethan Rawl is therefore. Ethan Rawl is therefore second, and Big Mike is therefore first.
A little diversion here, though, but does Ethan Rawl have a better chance at winning LSM of the Year than he does Rookie of the Year?
Well, I think Kevin and I disagree on Rookie of the Year, too. But I think, yeah, either way, there's multiple people higher than him in the Rookie of the Year.
Any reason why over Tucker?
Which I disagree with, and I vote. I mean, I guess we're not supposed to share our votes, but by the time you listen to this, the votes have already been tabulated, so I don't think it matters. I voted Ethan Rawl as Rookie of the Year.
That's not the question at hand. The question is who's had the better season at the LSM position, not who's scarier.
Owen?
I mean, consistency.
I
think Ethan Rawl has been consistently, like, since he stepped on the field, I think he's been a consistent game changer for them. Whereas, you know, I think you could maybe see the same thing
well,
for Sissoko.
Well, his second half of the season, I think.
But
this yeah,
is
yeah,
a
totally.
Weird year with the
no,
face-off.
I think his
so,
second half of the season kind of was like, sure started to go down a little bit, but he just started off so well that I was like, he might be a shoo-in. I had him as a MVP finalist at the halfway point of the season, and then gave room for even TD to overtake him. You know, he kind of slid down mm-hmm. to the fact that it get the clear rookie of the year for that's fair, but Tucker Dordovic, I think, is the, for me, and what he's done to that with Snakes offense, he's kind of been like the main force at times for coming out of the midfield.
I voted Bowen.
Yeah, you were really high on Bowen. Can you explain that?
Yeah, he's been excellent. I think statistically, as well as just like when you watch, he's one of the guys that is like a very key piece of the defense that goes up. Like every team in the PLL double pulls, right? It's just a matter of if you're doing which games, right? Which matchups. Bowen's been the guy that's jumped up and made that and like gives them that identity. And he's really good at it, which then he's also like good in transition and create stuff there, right? Like he's been really good at that. All the team defense stuff, I think, is a really important piece, right? And like the PLL offense, like, you know, the ball is just constantly moving faster. Dodges are happening quicker. The actual Dodger themselves is better, right? Like, so he's very quickly made that jump. And I would say that if anybody, right? And like, he's a close defender, which gives him a little bit of an advantage over the midfielders, right? Like LSM, Ethan Rawl, who's just not on the field for every possession. Dordovic, who's just not on the field for every possession, right? Like, Bowen's on the field for every possession, which just is giving him more opportunities to maximize his impact, right? So I think that helps as well. And then, I guess I'll just leave it at that. But I have one more point that I'll keep in the holster.
No, I don't agree with your ultimate pick, but I like your justification. And I think it's like, and part of the reason that I wanted to like start that discussion was because like, I don't think he's been, you know, given the same amount of buzz, so to speak. And it is just harder for a close defenseman to get that kind of attention. Like
if there was an attackman that was a rookie that has had the same level of impact from possession to possession that Will Bowen has had for the defense of the Chaos, then this is like a landslide because they would have like, you know, 35 points and would be like, you know, in the mix for like all pro type stuff, right? Like just like he is. So,
well, let's talk more defense. Your three all pro defenders, Kevin, let's go with you.
Yeah. So the three I've got are in descending order, kind of Jack Rowlett. I think he's hasn't been at his tip top best as he was the last two seasons, but he's still been at that elite level. Jack Hilty's taking the number one assignments for the Cannons, and I think he deserves a lot of recognition for his ability here from the Archers. Graham Hossick, he's just so good. He moves his feet so well. He's so physical. And, yeah, like, Michael Sowers is the only one that can get a step on him and get a shot off, so I think he's the clear front runner.
I have to take my statement back. I'm not ready to go to the war with you. You did not leave off the person that I thought you were going to.
Do you have the same three?
No, we do have one disagreement, but it's the disagreement that I am least confident in. I went back and forth on if this guy was second or first a bunch of different times. So the one that we have different is Garrett Eppel. I have Rowlett, Eppel, Hossick, just the three finalists. I went really far back and forth with Dunn and Eppel, but ended up taking Eppel. Similar to kind of what you were saying, Kev, you have a lot of the like a little bit of missed time. He's been a little bit banged up, so I don't know that he's totally been at his best all season in turn for Dunn, right? And then he's not always on ones because they favor hands, right? So like Cannons play whips and Bryce Young is guarding Asher Nolting because of a hands thing, right? So, like, I think that makes sense. But overall, like, Eppel 99% of the time gets ones. We saw the instance early in the year where Redwoods are playing Water Dogs and Sowers is having his way with his matchup. They switch Eppel onto it and Sowers kind of, like, disappears, right? Eppel does a lot. He takes a lot of risks, which is ultimately why I had so much trouble with where he fell to me, because he takes a lot of risks that I don't always agree with. And I think sometimes he gets burned for him, or he ends up staring at the ball because he's looking to make a play, slide into the back of the head or something and gets cut. Right. So like, there's a lot of risks to his game. But ultimately he's allowed to do that. And he's empowered to do that because he plays with a guy named Eddie Glazner who you know, a lot of times fixes those things. So ultimately ended up with Eppel in that spot. But it is really narrow to me.
And last is goalie. Cap,
want to start? Yeah, this is an easy one.
Yeah, I got Blaze.
Brent Dobson, great season. Colin Kearse, great season. Dylan Ward led the league in save percentage after kind of a rocky start, making that transition in from the indoor game. But Blaze reared in with his ability to jumpstart transition, ability to make clean saves, make unorthodox kind of movements in net. He's been really good again this season.
For sure. I think there's a little argument there, but shout out Brent Dobson. I think we're kind of seeing the beginnings of a really great hybrid box field career from him. You know, so eager to kind of see the rest of his career unfold. You know, he was someone who, you know, at St. Bonaventure, you know, it just shows how a really good goalie, you know, and I'm not saying he was the only person on that team, but a really good goalie can elevate a team and a program to such heights. So that was really exciting to see it pay off at the pro level for him. Yeah, I don't know. That was a pretty even, but I'm going to go Cap 1 point for that and give Cap the overall win for the Kevin versus Kaplan segment, Kevin versus Cap segment that we're doing today. So
I humbly take this defeat. I'll be back with vengeance, the next Cap versus Kevin bout. So hold your horses.
We'll have to do this next week after the quarterfinal. That was fun. You guys looking forward to the games on Monday?
Let's go. Pumped. Full day of lax. Lax day. Hashtag labor lax.
One thing that I love that we haven't talked about is just the fact that these games are on Labor Day. You know, I've actually kind of, there might have to be some compression with the season, and obviously the World Championship, you know, changes the flow of the season to some extent, but I've kind of thought that whether it's the championship or some sort of like, you know, premier end of season event for the PLL makes sense on Labor Day, you know, with Memorial Day being kind of the college weekend and Labor Day weekend being the pro weekend, feels like kind of a natural way to do it. Get the championship in before football really starts. So, you know, I'd be eager to see if there's, yeah, but I actually think like Labor Day Monday is like a good, like, you know, in the same way that Memorial Day Monday is a good thing. I like the daytime game also. We'll see. I'm curious to see how the schedule kind of goes forward without the World Championships. My hot take, and I don't think it's really even a hot take, I said this to, I think, both of you guys earlier in the year, is that the All-Star game should be eliminated. But that's for a different time. Awesome. Well, playoffs this weekend, so make sure you guys are watching it. PLL quarterfinals, and then we're going to have the championship is going to culminate at the end of the month in Philadelphia. So keep looking forward to the PLL Happy Hour podcast. We'll try to get some guests next week and keep Cap versus Kevin alive. Fight to the death.